What's in your bag?
What's in the bag?
Yeah, what's in the bag?
The bag, bitch.
My friend's got a bag full of explosives.
We must find the bag.
I don't know what's in the bag.
What's in the bag?
You want to see what's in my bag?
Hello and welcome back to What's in the Bag. We are the Venice Photo Club podcast, and today we are here with our good friend Gabe Gluskin-Braun. Did I say that right?
Yeah, you got it.
I crushed it. Okay, I was really worried before we started recording that it was going to be real bad. And I didn't want to make a habit of getting people's names wrong. So anyway, Gabe, welcome. You are a founding member, a very early member of the photo club.
I like to call myself the first lady.
The first lady of the photo club.
I am married to one of the people who helps organize this. And I have been around the photo club for like 3 years. So
yeah, very.
And now I am married to one of the people who helps make things happen. So, I kiss hands, I kiss babies, shake hands, and look pretty and take some pictures.
You're the eye candy of the photo club is what you're telling me.
Yes.
Good.
Mm-hmm.
And also take pictures and the such.
Mm-hmm.
Are a member of the club favorite photo development business.
Yes, I have my hands on a lot of film over at Mira's Film Lab as the director of operations. I do a lot of
Is that your LinkedIn title?
Yeah. Customer service and developing and organizing and all that stuff. I've been shooting film. I've been shooting film for almost 7 years now. Again, this inspiration of Mira got me to take my dad's old Pentax ME Super off the cabinet from when I was home and started shooting and haven't looked back.
I was gonna say, yeah, 7 years later, here we are. We've made it all the way here. That's it feels like everyone has that exact same like introduction to film. Is like my dad or my grandma or my grandpa just like had this camera. I was like, oh, might as well do this. And then like we've all bought thousands of dollars worth of film all these years later.
Oh yeah, the gateway drug in the attic.
Yeah, exactly.
It's just sitting there.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Exactly. All right, so we are going to get into what's in your bag, Gabe. So, just first off, what kind of bag do you use for your photography?
The bag I use kind of changes on the situation. The main two kinds of shooting I do are street/cityscapes, and then also landscapes, nature stuff. I'm a rock climber. I like to get out into nature. So either I'm kind of packing a bag for a day in the city, or I'm packing a bag for a day in the mountains. And so I don't necessarily have one camera bag.
Yeah.
Those
are pretty different.
Yeah. There wouldn't be a bag that would really work for both of those. So my cameras seem to just go in the bag that I'm bringing around. I have this cute little Fjallraven blue little cute bag for city days. And it's small, but yet can still fit like 135, one medium format camera.
Oh, okay.
And then I recently just got a Mountain Hardware Scrambler 35 liter rock climbing backpack. And I cannot tell you how excited I am to have this backpack because it is specifically designed for climbing. So you have a lot of carabiners, you have a lot of harnesses, you have all this stuff. And it has all the things that lets you actually organize those inside the bag very well. And that's separate from the cameras. But it will mean that I can also organize my cameras better when I put stuff in that bag because the climbing stuff isn't just strewn everywhere.
It's not just thrown in there. Yeah, I was curious if you have so much gear with climbing, like an absurd amount. Sometimes it's scary. When I see people like with climbing gear and they've got like 35 carabiners in like they're
35.
I don't know.
Numbers.
Sorry. And they're like they've got like six like ATCs like hanging from their backpack and just who knows what else. But I was curious. Do you think that lends itself to like a camera bag? Like, do you think like take all the gear away? Like, are we all like schmucks for not using climbing bags as camera bags?
I don't think so. I think they have good compartments, which might be nice for like storing film or a lens. But the thing is, the stuff that you bring climbing is very durable. Carabiners,
okay,
belay devices, they can be thrown around a little bit.
Yeah.
And so nothing in the climbing bag is really designed to like protect the actual stuff.
Gotcha.
Because the stuff can take a beating. And so I have to like wrap up my cameras in like a sweatshirt or something when I put them in a climbing backpack.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot of metal things bouncing around and I don't want it to get messed up. So I don't think it's generally a good principle to treat a climbing backpack as a camera backpack, but I'm very excited for this one because it just stops the mess and I can just organize better and protect the cameras
Understandable.
Better. Maybe now we're talking. ideas are coming. Finding like the protective inserts
from
a camera bag and
putting
that in my climbing backpack, that would be elite. That would be elite.
That's the overlap that we need. Mm.
Mm-mm-mm. Gotcha. I'm taking notes.
Okay,
I'm gonna write this down.
Go for it. Yeah. You said you just got the bag. Well, let's stick with the Mountain Hardware one.
Uh-huh.
We all kind of know like a Fjall Raven bag, you know.
Yeah.
So of the bag, what's your favorite detail of it?
It has a loop inside the backpack, like against the wall that your back touches.
Mm-hmm.
That's basically it's just like a reinforced, like. Almost looks like hammock shaped little like cord.
Okay.
And it's plastic and it's protected and it's very durable. That's the best thing because you can basically just clip all of those carabiners to that loop.
Gotcha.
And they're basically in there for you. It's called being racked.
Mm-hmm.
Like just like organized.
Okay.
All your stuff is racked there. And so then a lot of the time the climbing I like to do, it's a long hike in. And then you're setting up for a long day on the wall. I like to do the ones that are like a couple hundred feet tall.
Yeah.
And you have to move up slowly. It takes a long time. That's your day. You're going up for the day.
Yeah.
But also you need to move quickly because you don't want to waste time.
You're
usually far out, maybe in like you need to.
You got to get in and get going.
Yeah. And so it's really – I hate when all my stuff is – all over the place and I get there and I have to like organize everything before I can get on the climb. So it's really nice I love having that little loop that has everything nice and organized for you when you're ready to
understandably
get
out there. Yeah.
And then it also has the same loops on the outside, kind of like on the hips, that almost makes it look like you're wearing a harness but you're not.
Okay.
And so there's just so much stuff to clip and it's great.
It's just the clips. Anything that needs a lot of clips, this bag is the thing for you.
Yeah.
And I guess to be fair, we should probably pivot a little bit because this isn't a climbing pod. But
I would love it to be. I'll make it. I'll push in that direction.
Just any question that I ask, it's just like, well, how can I attribute that to climbing? Mm-hmm. Is actually no. So with this bag, what camera is in this bag?
So in that bag, there's kind of two categories. One is going to be probably my go-to camera, which I have with me right now, which is a Canon AE-1 program. Shout out to Mira. Also, she found this at a Goodwill for $60.
Stop.
With a lens. I think they go for like $350.
That's insane.
And it's like mint. It was mint when I got it. I have since beaten it up.
Understandably.
But it is awesome. It's just a workhorse.
Yeah.
And I love the way it has a lot of, I have a 1.8 lens on it.
Okay.
So, and it has a lot of shutter speed. It's just, and a really simple light meter. The whole thing is just perfect SLR vibes.
Yeah.
Just a workhorse. It also, when you take a picture, the different shutter speeds have different sounds and they're very loud and distinct. And so you can really feel the camera taking the picture and it's just very satisfying.
And
so that one I loved, I'll just always have. and takes great shots no matter the situation. But in the climbing scenario specifically, I have a beater point and shoot.
Okay.
It's a Minolta point and shoot, and it's thick. It's got some muscle to it.
Some oomph.
And it can take a beating. It's very ergonomic.
Uh-huh.
So even, I guess it's a little chunky and weird for like probably a lot of scenarios, but it's really nice when I'm like, it's the kind of camera that is under $100. And when I'm 200 feet up, if I take it out to take a picture and I drop it, it's not the end of the world.
Yeah.
And it's just very easy to handle in that situation. You can really grip it, which it might be a little awkward in everyday life to shoot it a lot. But I love having it in nature situations and like taking it up on rock walls.
Gotcha.
So that's usually what I'm taking out to the crag.
So I'm noticing two things. One, you're bringing cameras that can take a beating.
Mm-hmm.
And two, you're shooting mostly film, if not entirely film.
I basically shoot exclusively film.
Exclusively
I
film.
I do not. I take some digital pictures on my phone.
Okay.
It's either phone or film. Phone or film.
Okay. Okay.
And in terms of volume, I've probably taken more film photos than camera photos in the last couple years.
I would get that on a t-shirt.
Yeah.
Film or phone.
Film or phone.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No DSLRs.
No DSLRs in here.
Nope.
Yeah, yeah.
We Sony? Don't know her. Never heard. Never heard.
Yeah, Sony, until you make a film camera, we don't want to hear about it.
Yeah, this is me telling Sony to make a film camera, because I'd buy that.
Yeah, honestly, yeah. They probably have the tech for it, but they're too busy making other good cameras.
Mirrorless and things. I want all the mirrors. Give me mirrors.
You want as many mirrors as possible. Yeah. As many mirrors as I can shove into a camera.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, my goodness.
And yeah, it's all film. It's all film.
Would you ever sell these cameras? Like, is there something else out there that's better? Or are these like
kind of a hoarder in the sense? Well, also, so the dynamic with the cameras I have, it's a very hand-me-down situation because mm-hmm. I'm married to a professional photographer.
Understandably.
And who shoots mostly film as well. And so she will be upgrading her kit as she's been upgrading her kit consistently over the time we've been together. And kind of it goes from her camera to we're sharing it because she doesn't shoot it as much
mm-hmm.
to she's done with it, so I get to shoot it.
She's over it, so you get the leftovers. Yeah.
And so I don't, and so then, but that also means I don't really have the right to sell anything because, okay. And both of us are very sentimental and like to hold on to things.
Mm-hmm.
So the cameras don't really leave. They come in and they don't leave.
Yeah.
So we just have a good collection and we love sharing them with friends, family. They get good use. Everything gets good use, but until it breaks or whatever. But I don't think I would really get rid of cameras. I probably use them until they're gone.
And these are workhorses, so yes. Like it's going to take a second.
Yeah. Yeah. But that's why I like having a camera from a reputable brand that's not super, that's not, I'm not really into the dinky cameras. Mm-hmm. I'm into the ones that are like from the era when like they made things that could be, yeah.
Yeah.
Because the other main camera I've been shooting lately is a Mamiya 645 medium format camera, which I have a viewfinder, so you can hold it up to your eye, and that thing is also just a brick. But it's also not to the size of, because the camera I sometimes shoot is an RB67, because again, hand-me-downs,
of things course.
I can, it's in the house and I can use it when it doesn't have film in it. And that one's way too big. And so the 645 can actually be taken around on a day in the city. It can be taken around on a hike. Although, like I said, I wouldn't really take it on a hike because it's a little too valuable. Where even if something happens, rain, falling, that's a little too high value to take it in that kind of situation. But I love these cameras that are just like, they're from the era when companies made cameras.
Mm-hmm.
When like, oh, this is like, there was a profession.
Yeah.
When like, that's every photo, every journalist had like a film camera.
Yeah, something. It was the bread and butter. It was like, it was essential in order to capture anything. You had to make a good camera.
Yeah. So I like having those ones. And even though the repairs are expensive on those, you can repair them.
Yeah.
Like the little, like we have some point and shoots because they're fun and they get the job done. But if you break one of them, it costs more to repair it than it would be to get another one.
Mm-hmm.
So I really like having the ones where it's high value, but then also it's worth putting the money into repairing it if
yeah.
it breaks.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah, essentially investing in something that is actually worth purchasing. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
And I mean, until these companies, I think I saw something today that Pentax is making new film cameras.
Really?
Like real ones that aren't like crappy boxes of plastic.
Do we have a timeline on this? Or
I think they just like teased. But anyways, until companies start making actual film cameras again,
mm-hmm.
gonna go with the classics.
We're gonna go with the classics. Yeah. So we kind of went through the cameras that you use climbing. We briefly touched on the ones that you kind of take on the street. So we've got those in your bag. When you're out shooting, let's go either one direction or another. If you want to do more street, I guess I should ask which would you say is your like preferred style of photography? Do you prefer like doing stuff more on the street, or do you prefer like the climbing, outdoor, hike, nature aspect of things?
I think if it's the right place, I think nature, mm-hmm. probably landscapes. Because those are really, some of them are one of a kind.
Yeah.
At this point, and this is one of my gripes with the world as it is right now,
okay.
is that a lot of cities and a lot of places that humans exist have become kind of the same. Maybe it's just in America, mm-hmm. but like you can see the same strip mall, basically, like the same exact place
yeah.
in Los Angeles as you can in the middle of nowhere. Nebraska, no offense, Nebraska. Just no offense. But to like where I'm from in Philadelphia, like there is a format,
mm-hmm.
and sometimes even in other countries in different contexts, the architecture, the world kind of looks the same in a lot of ways.
Yeah.
And so I'm not really good at, I think there's a, like, I love seeing people do like street photography of, like,
yeah.
people, and the people make it different.
Yes.
Like not to say that everyone and everywhere is the same, but as someone who's more about, who doesn't want to necessarily try to like take pictures of people on the street.
Yeah.
Cities, even cool cities, even like unique cities, aren't my favorite to shoot because the modern city just kind of looks the
all
same.
Kind of blends together.
Yeah, it blends together.
Yeah.
And so but nature, like I think one of my favorite pictures I've ever taken was way up deep in the Teton National Park,
mm-hmm.
deep into a kind of turned into like a sketchy hike, backpacking, and we come around a corner and see a giant moose. And so, and then we go past it a little bit to just get out of like the danger area.
Yeah.
And I look back down this valley, get to see this moose chilling in this campsite with the Grand Teton behind it. That's and I was
wild.
I don't know when I'm like, I don't, you can't recreate that.
Yeah.
And so that, the scenes that nature gives you, And oftentimes when you're in there, you're with people who you're comfortable with. And so then you can create an amazing scene of people in amazing places, the human and nature all together. So I'd say, I think ideally, an amazing nature spot. I think, but nature is just higher hit rate of like,
yeah.
if I'm going out to an amazing place, there's going to be an opportunity to take some amazing.
Yeah, absolutely.
At the same time though, like I would like the LA mountains, which are, while fun, like all the different hikes you can do the LA mm-hmm. area, they all kind of, like, with the chaparral, and they all end up kind of looking the same. Mm-hmm. Maybe I've just done enough of the same hikes that I'm just not inspired anymore. But, like, some of the climbing spots in LA that I go to pretty frequently, I kind of stop being excited to take pictures there because I feel like I've taken all the pictures. But going out to, but I'm super excited just recently with Roy, shout out to Roy of Venice Photo Club and Backgammon Club. Roy took me up into the Sierras and to a place I'd never been and was just fully inspired again. So
that's great.
Something, maybe it's something about going to somewhere that feels new or different.
Yeah, I think it's a big deal for me. I think sometimes it takes, even if you go somewhere like that you've been a lot, I think sometimes it just requires somebody else to be there to point at, like, to refresh your perspective on something. Mm-hmm. You know, like I used to live in the mountains, and like, you know, you eventually like grow like accustomed to it, and then people show up and they're like, oh my God,
yeah,
this is crazy. Like, hey, you live here? And then you just kind of have to look around and you're like, oh shit, I do live here. This is crazy. Because it'd be the same thing. It's like, I would just go to a different friend's house and I'd drive 2 hours, still in the mountains, and I'd look around and be like, this is beautiful. And like, but it's just that refresh, like, perspective of things. And it's, I think even more so when you're taking photos, sometimes when you're searching and searching and searching and searching for something in a place that you've been in the same way, if you just like keep on approaching it with the same like eyes, it can be really, really hard to find something that's inspiring.
I that recently I had kind of one of those moments where like rediscovering my normal environment. I just hadn't shot for probably like 2 or 3 months. I just like hadn't taken a picture, and I was really kind of bummed out about it. I was watching a film review. A new film stock came out. By the way, it was a video about Harman Phoenix 200, a new color film stock that came out recently.
Oh, interesting.
I think it's fire, and I think people should check it out.
What's it called again?
Harman Phoenix 200.
Okay.
I did a little film review of it on my Instagram, which is Gabe_GB. Didn't mean to do a shameless plug, but now I am.
It would have come later anyway.
Yeah. Yeah. And I did a little film review on it, film stock review. It was awesome. But that review, the person took these amazing shots of extremely mundane situations and places, and it really got me excited to like shoot a little bit more. And so then the next week I went out for a little photo walk in my neighborhood in Mar Vista and took some of my favorite shots that I probably have ever taken just by walking down the same streets and just not, I think film makes, because it's expensive, because it's, because you can't just take a million shots.
Mm-hmm.
It makes you be more intentional, but sometimes it goes so far that you aren't willing to take pictures of mundane things because you're worried that it won't be worth it.
Yeah.
And it allowed me to break that a little bit because I just decided to take pictures of the mundane stuff on Mercastle Ave in Mar Vista. Mm-hmm. And it came out with some great stuff that I'm really excited about. And at the Mar Vista Farmers Market.
Yeah.
So like, I've been into that idea of rediscovering what's normal around you.
Yeah, I think
there's, or what feels normal around you.
Yeah, like stuff that you're used to. And I think sometimes it's good to kind of give yourself the freedom of that constraint almost, and just the, and I forget what the saying is, but it's something along the lines of like creativity thrives within like limitations.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas like when you put restraints or constraints within like a certain boundary of things or stuff like that, it makes you think outside of the box of what you've normally been doing. So if you constrain yourself to your city block, suddenly things are more interesting, or you're looking to see things in a different way than you have before. And I guess, yeah, sometimes you just need a different type of film to let that happen.
Yeah.
So you said you were inspired by the film.
And it was the film, but also the specifically that I was just watching a YouTube film review.
Okay.
And the guy was just taking, like, was really analyzing the colors and of the, and really evaluating this new film stock that had been released. And the pictures that he took were just like some people unloading stuff on like the back of a building, or like a random picture inside a coffee shop.
Mm-hmm.
And it was like stuff where if I saw that on my roll, like if I shot a roll and it came back, I'd be like, yeah. But I thought about that. I was like, why? But the images that he were taking were so gorgeous, mm-hmm. but the subject, I would say, were not super inspiring, yeah. but the fact that they were these gorgeous pictures and I was like excited about them made me be like, I should take more pictures of the mundane stuff or the stuff that has become normal to me in my environment, and kind of just reoriented myself towards, like, as a photographer, sometimes it's, we've got this cool trip, I'm going to take cool pictures while I'm out on this trip, or this cool event,
mm-hmm.
or this important event, like, thing in my life. But sometimes, if honing a craft, building creativity, trying out a new film stock, you're just going to take pictures. Like, I've loved just going out and taking some pictures of stuff, really trying hard, like you were saying, to, mm-hmm. like, force myself to find interesting things, fun things to photograph, play with colors, light, all that, just in the, like, houses on my block that I had,
yeah,
my neighborhood that I've walked through a million times.
Yeah, taking pictures for the art of taking pictures instead of taking pictures of the cool things that you want to capture.
Yeah.
Which, like, there's a place for both of them, obviously, but, mm-hmm. like, I do think that there's different motivations behind them.
Yeah.
But
100%.
Yeah, this seems kind of like we're regressing in it a little bit, but I do want to talk more about your bags. Mm. And like it kind of ties into your methodology of things, just in terms of your approach to capturing things well. Like, what is there, are there other things that you have in your bag, or like what else do you have in your bag that you think contributes to your to capturing things, to making sure that you are prepared for whatever you're doing, whether it's, you can pick either nature or street. I feel let's just stick with nature, just in terms of, after hearing what you were talking about, it definitely, you were like, I guess it would be nature, after you just like shit on the cities for a while, and then you were like, nature just has this different like power to it. It was like, let's stick with nature. In regards to that, like when you're taking out, like, what else do you bring with you to make sure that you're like, what else is in your bag?
Definitely when I can, when it's not like, when I'm not like have to really engineer my backpack for about, like, if I'm going backpacking,
yeah,
to save
every ounce, like half and, ounce,
yeah. Try to bring multiple lenses. I think sometimes I get, like, it's kind of like the grass is greener on the is always greener on the other side, where I will put on a more wide lens because I don't want to get stuck with like being like having a tight image. I want to be able to have a wide image.
Mm-hmm.
But then sometimes it's so wide that you can't really like focus on anything.
Yeah, and you can't hone in.
Yeah. And so I like having multiple lenses when I can is really important, because then I don't end up frustrated that I missed out on something I wanted to capture. Then film,
of course.
Film, obviously.
Do you have like a type that you usually are like, this is my stuff?
I'm kind of a jack of all trades when it comes to film.
If we opened your bag right now,
mm-hmm.
what would it be?
Definitely CineStill 50D.
Okay.
Which is a really good daylight film. I love, it has this like yellow green vibe that's okay. incredible. It's really good for nature. It does require a bright day to be really special, but you know, we get those in California.
I was gonna say, it's a good thing we live in LA.
Yeah, 50D is really lovely. I have been really into E6 color positive film as well lately.
Okay.
Which the classic one is Kodak Ektachrome, but then also I shot a roll of Fuji Velvia 50, which is on a medium format one, which was lovely. And I like, again, requires a lot of light for those, but I love the colors on them so much. And also just because the physical film, you can like see the image on it.
Yeah.
It's incredible.
Yeah.
So and because I work in a film lab, I do a lot of developing myself, though seeing the image is special.
That is, because most of
the
time
I'm just pulling these negatives out and just, you know, handing them off to the scanning process.
Mm-hmm.
And I love seeing the actual image on the film. It's sweet.
So you're bringing all of these with you if you can, or will you like pick one for like what you're going to do?
Yeah. Well, I think I just outlined all my sunny day films.
Oh, okay. That's fair.
50D and Ektachrome and Fuji Velvia 50 are kind of like my daylight films. I used to be into Ektar, Kodak Ektar. I'm not anymore.
Forget about it.
Yeah, done with that phase. And I'm kind of, they're like, I play around with Kodak Gold 200, Kodak Color Plus 200, Kodak Portrait. It's kind of like how I'm feeling on a day.
Yeah, you have the full like access to everything, so you might as well just pick. You pick films the same way that I picked Visco filters in middle school. Just taking a picture and just like, no. Oh, that's the one right there. It's
I haven't really settled on a particular style. Like, some people just have one stock and they love it. I think it might just be because that's kind of the person I am in general. I love trying out different things.
Yeah.
I don't really settle on like food, travel, study languages, like all these things. Like, I really like having a broad, I don't always just like commit to.
Yeah, you like a taste of it all.
Yeah. So I'm never really like, I guess there's kind of like a range of films where like I know that I'm gonna get something good out of them. And I'm kind of over there. I definitely had a phase where I was experimental.
Okay.
Like Lomography Metropolis.
Of course.
Anything from Lomography.
Of course.
Is kind of crazy. I had a phase where I shot a lot of expired film.
Mm-hmm.
I'm over that now because the results were never what I wanted.
Backseat.
Yeah.
Out of here.
So I'm over. I've definitely gone through some phases, and I guess I've just like settled into the classics.
Okay.
Of, I kind of don't want to shoot something where I'm not 100% sure of the results, unless I'm specifically doing like shooting it for like the purpose of discovery.
Yeah.
Like on the, like the Harman film. I took that, I shot that like a crazy person because I wanted to just try, it was a new film. I wanted to try it out, see what the results would look like. So I really liked the Harman film, and I'm probably going to incorporate that more. But yeah, I kind of like Kodak Gold 200, Kodak Portra 400. Cinestill. Yeah, I rotate. Depends on the day. I like the feeling that when I go to load a camera that I'm doing something different from last time.
Gotcha.
Which sometimes screws me over because then I'm like, oh, I liked all that things from last time and now I'm doing something else.
I'm doing something that I might not like.
Yeah. So it may be in a creativity challenge for me. I'm thinking of this just now.
Yeah.
A creativity challenge for me would be to just force myself to shoot the same stock of film like four rolls in a row to actually be like, okay, we're gonna hone a little bit.
Yeah. If you could only have one film, you had to pick one film, stay with it the rest of your life, what would it be? What's your gut say?
My gut says Kodak Portra 400, which is a really boring answer, but that's the point of that film, is that it's reliable, where I wouldn't want, if I would, like, you can't really get sick of it because all it does is just have good colors, have accurate colors.
It does its job.
It doesn't do anything.
It clocks in, it does its job, clocks out.
But for the sake of argument, let's get rid of the portraits. let's get rid of the portraits. Let's think, let's, you know, I'm going to engage with your question.
Okay. He's stumped.
A little bit. Little bit. Probably, I would probably go with Kodak Gold 200.
Okay.
It's diverse. It's variable. And like, I don't, it's being a 200 speed. It's, I don't really take pictures at night.
Yeah.
And so 200 wouldn't really work for night in any situation, but I don't really need it to. When it definitely has this like yellow, like gold.
Yeah.
Browns, oranges, yellows, are really nice. And I think I would be willing to, I'd commit to it, to a little gold. It's also on the cheaper side.
There you go. Efficiency.
Even though Kodak keeps increasing its prices constantly. So I think, yeah.
This is a subtle drag.
You know, I could make gold work. I could make gold work.
Okay. Okay.
And I think I would, there, and it would, and it still works in a lot of situations, even though it's not as like, it's not like, you know, tried and true. Mm-hmm. Some situations might not come out great.
Yeah.
But I think it would elevate a lot of the stuff that I do.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah.
That was stressful.
I was going to say, I didn't mean to make you question everything with the question. I could, in your eyes, you just kind of like, oh. But
that was a stressful question.
I didn't mean to stress you out. It's interesting to me because we've talked more about film than any actual camera equipment so far.
Oh, and that's what's in my bag.
Well, that's what I'm saying. Well, that's what I'm saying is that like it's interesting because like that's what we've
Yeah. Oh. Wait. Okay. This film was discontinued. Okay. I'm speaking to the Fujifilm gods right now. Please start producing Fujifilm Pro 400H in 35mm format again. Please. I found the stock. I shot it once, and it was my favorite shots I ever took, and then they discontinued it immediately. So now you can get it for like $80 a roll.
Yeah.
But I'm not paying that.
Yeah, absolutely not.
So now I'm just destined to look through the same 36 pictures and think about what it could have been.
Just think about it. Imagine if it hadn't turned out that well.
Yeah.
You only got like 4.
Yeah.
That would have been even more devastating.
Yeah.
Is that just a shout out to them? Just like a prayer to the gods? Or is that changing your answer? If you could that's have not, it.
No, I think I'm going to stick with my answer.
Okay.
Because practically it's not.
Of course.
You know, in production.
Yeah.
But I think if they put that back into production, that would be the one. That would be the first film I would go, like, I'm just going to shoot on this exclusively for a bit. And
gotcha.
And find my pocket.
Sounds perfect. How would you describe your, like, style of photography? You know, we've talked about where you shoot and kind of, like, the nature aspect of mm-hmm. it. What would you consider it, landscape? Or would you consider it even, like, lifestyle or, like, documentary?
Probably documentary.
Okay.
I like to capture something beyond what's going on. I like it to feel like it means something, mm-hmm. and usually it does. Some of my most meaningful pictures, to me at least, are pictures from my travels to Jordan, Egypt, the West Bank, Mexico City, in the mountains, shots that feel like and even when I'm in the mountains, like the picture that I was talking about earlier, the shot I took of the moose, if the moose wasn't there, I don't know if it would mean as much to me,
mm-hmm.
because that was a moment where something special happened.
Yeah.
where I captured a specific moment, not just that place is always there.
Yeah, absolutely.
I could go back to that spot again, but there's not necessarily going to be a moose there.
Yeah, you can hypothetically get the exact same shot of like the nature itself. Yeah. Just, you know, you can't lure wildlife.
Yeah. So I mean, you could. It'd probably be bad. but I like, and or images where I feel like I was there for a moment where the colors really hit. There's mm-hmm. one of my favorite pictures I took was of a church in old Cairo. in the Coptic Christian area, and just like this gorgeous, like catching the like the there was shadow on one side of the building, yellow light on the other, and it, like it came out, and the sky, blue sky behind it, and everything came out like perfect. And that lighting, that time of day where I was, and it was also very a specific moment in my life. Like it feels like a time capsule. Or it feels like it has some meaning, not just that, you know, it was a picture that was snapped,
mm-hmm.
A random picture that was snapped. So I like pictures. I like to take stuff that doesn't, which is, again, is my fight with the mundane. I think I would prefer, I prefer to take pictures in important places while important things are happening.
Mm-hmm.
Some of my favorite pictures. So I was a grad student at UCLA during the strike, the UC-wide graduate student strike.
Oh, okay, yeah.
In last fall of 2022.
Gotcha.
Yes, fall of 2022. And some of my favorite pictures I took were on the picket line of people marching, gathering, being a part of like a moment,
doing something bigger. Yeah.
Yeah. So that some, those are very special to me. And I mean, that's kind of a high bar because
yeah.
You can't expect things, cool things to always be happening. But I think if you keep taking pictures, like recently I've kind of transitioned to, I keep bringing my camera to the photo club,
mm-hmm.
To like the morning coffee things.
Yeah.
And I kind of realized I was like, even though I'm a gearhead, I always just like to bring a camera around because mm-hmm. I like to have gear.
Yeah.
But I decided, well, I'm bringing this camera, I'm never taking any pictures. So I just decided to start taking portraits of people at the coffee mixers.
Yeah.
And those are starting to become some of my most cherished things lately.
Oh, really?
Cherished shots lately, because they're just the people in my life, people I like, friends.
Yeah.
And I love getting those shots as well. And so I think there's not much of a middle. It's like I can really embrace the mundane and then I can embrace the special, but the in-between is a little bit of a...
The slightly exciting?
Yeah. The slightly exciting doesn't really do it. Like, even even going to, like, you know, go to a baseball game,
yeah.
Take a picture of a stadium, it's like, it doesn't really do it for me.
That's a pretty good definition of slightly exciting.
Yeah, it's like, ooh, going out to a baseball game.
Ooh, the Dodgers, slightly exciting.
Yeah, it's like, it's not, unless it's like, you know, the World Series or something.
Yeah, a pivotal moment in history.
Yeah. Yeah, I guess I just don't. Yeah, I don't have much of a tolerance for the slightly exciting.
we need absolute like bore or like moment in history.
Yeah, yeah.
Or your friends.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because I do love the. I like my people. So like. I find a lot of value in like hanging out with the same, like it could be the 500th time I've hung out with the same people doing exactly the same thing. And it's hard for me to kind of get bored with that.
Yeah.
And then another challenge is to like capture that like sense of what about that is worth like capturing on.
Yeah.
Like, and how
do you capture that?
Yeah. Capture something that has happened, million times. So
do you feel like you have to capture it every time it happens?
Because no,
I felt like that sometimes, where it's like I'm hanging out with, every time that I hang out with like that same group of people that you're talking about, I feel like I want to capture this again, but it's like, how do I capture that in a way that's not the exact same way that I tried to capture it last time? Yeah.
And then sometimes the thing that feels the most special is to like not capture anything at all.
Yeah.
And like just and forget about like needing to produce something about it and just like be there with the peeps.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think every time I take a picture, that's kind of in the back of my head.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, you could just remember this.
Yeah. Well, yeah. Sometimes part of getting older to me feels like I either feel like I'm going crazy that I don't have that, like I can't remember anything, or I just realize my brain has reached the point where there's too much information and it can't store all of it. I've had too many memories. There's been too many things. It can't store all of it. So that's why it's getting into journaling. A journal is in the bag, or it's becoming part of the bag.
Yeah.
Or writing down the little memories, because I've realized if a cool car goes by on the street, or I have a special moment with a friend, or that mildly exciting kind of thing, something that makes you happy on a day-to-day basis or excited on a day-to-day basis, but that isn't like monumental.
Yeah.
You're going to forget those things.
Yeah.
You're not going to be able to really retain them. And so it's important to find some way to capture that, but you don't have to capture every single one of those, because there are going to be a million of those.
Yeah.
Your life is full of mildly exciting or boring things, and not all of them are worth remembering, but it's important to not forget those things, but also it's important not to feel like you have to capture every single one of them.
You can just enjoy it in the moment and let it move on.
Yeah. But I also kind of feel like I understand, like, I think I didn't have much patience when I was like probably like a young teenager for like my dad in particular taking pictures of everything as we went, like as smartphones were becoming a thing, him kind of like taking pictures with every like family thing that we did. I didn't really have like patience for that, because I was like, just be in the moment or whatever. But now I kind of understand it.
Yeah, you got a lot of free like real estate in your brain when you're 9.
Yeah.
So
it's free real estate.
Yeah, so let's get through this bag. Okay, so you have your camera, you have your film, you have your journal. What else do you have in here? What are the essentials?
Snacks. I get hangry quickly. I need to eat. I need to have a constant flow of calories for sure.
Constant.
Coffee. I mean, the coffee probably shouldn't be in the bag, but the coffee is in the proverbial bag of things that come with me. Especially with the friends who I like go like to talk about the climbing bag. Yeah, it's like we're no matter how early we're up to climb, someone's bringing coffee to the trailhead.
Yeah, you have to.
Yeah. So some snacks. I'll put everyone on to this. This is something I discovered on a climbing trip. It was just a climbing day out. Beef jerky. Open that up and throw in some lime peanuts.
Okay.
Insane.
Interesting.
Insane combination. It's so good. Beef jerky and lime peanuts.
Beef jerky, lime peanuts. Where are we getting this from?
So I don't really keep kosher anymore in the like traditional sense. I like to think sustainably and ethically about what I consume, but I'm kind of past the like traditional way of keeping kosher or whatever.
Gotcha.
But for a while, I discovered this when I was eating kosher, and it was a kosher beef jerky company called Aufschnitz from Baltimore, Maryland.
Okay.
They make really good beef jerky.
Phenomenal.
Especially their teriyaki flavors.
Okay.
And then the lime peanuts were from a random gas station, because I got them on the way and I didn't even realize. And then I think it was I had a bite. I didn't pour them in together. I had a bite of beef jerky and I had a little bit of peanuts. And I was like, wait, this tastes amazing.
You're like, this is perfect.
And then I poured them together and I was like, oh yeah, buddy, here we go.
My favorite
part. Also, trademark.
Yeah, verbal trademark, right?
Verbal
here.
Trademark. I want to patent this.
My favorite part about this entire thing is that this is the most animated you've gotten the entire conversation.
The beef jerky.
It's about your beef jerky lime peanuts combo. Oh,
incredible.
Yeah.
Incredible.
Absolutely. Honestly, that sounds like a full bag to me.
Yeah.
Like snacks, equipment, coffee.
Yeah.
I'm ready for a whole day.
Yeah. Ready to go.
Yeah.
Ready to go. In my bag is also an AirTag, because I lose everything that I own.
Good move.
I love a good, I love a good hat.
Okay.
I've been wearing kind of the same Venice Photo Club hat for a long time.
Mm-hmm.
Because
well worn.
Good hat, obviously, always trying to rep. But specifically, it's this Nike 1986. It's called the Nike 1986 is like the like type of hat that
okay
that with the, you know, on which the Photo Club logo is added.
Of course.
And it is just an incredible hat. It just sticks, and it actually sticks on my head. That's the problem. It sticks on my head. All, no, like the trucker hats don't stay on my head.
Uh-huh.
I don't think I have a big head, but I have a lot of hair.
Okay, yeah.
For the listener who hasn't met me, I have luscious.
Luscious locks
growing down to my shoulders. This is the longest my hair has ever been.
It looks
shout
good.
Out to Lush.
It looks
shout
good,
out
yeah.
to Lush for the products that allow my hair to look.
Yeah, he gave it a little shake right there. It's important that you know that.
and so I feel like a lot of hats make like just like end up riding up and like popping off my head.
Mm-hmm.
And for some reason, the specific hat just stays on there and does what it's supposed to do.
Mm-hmm.
And I love it.
Phenomenal.
Yeah. I got a hat. I got sunglasses.
Okay.
Important. I'm a squinter.
Okay.
If you try to take a picture of me, I'm most likely just going to squint.
Just squint back at
so,
you.
So if there's any amount of light, so gotcha. The only way I really relax is if I have
you got either, some sunnies.
Yeah, yeah, sunnies for sure.
Perfect.
That's kind of – I like physical books.
Okay.
I like to have a book on me just kind of like
– Just always? Like even when you're shooting?
Not when I'm shooting. No. I mean, if I'm, like, going out for a photo shoot,
yeah.
I'm not bringing a book. But, like, again, in, like, the multi-use backpack
in the multi- kind of yeah, yeah,
situation,
yeah.
I like to have one tucked in there just for the right situation.
Yeah.
Mostly, I'm trying – I just finished grad school where I did so much reading in school that I didn't do any reading outside of school. And so I'm trying to get back into doing more casual reading now because it used to be I just read for homework. And I think they're a little bit of a toxic relationship developed there.
That's fair.
So I'm trying to get back into reading for fun as like a concept and a practice.
Absolutely.
So.
Gotcha.
Yeah.
One important, now that we've made it through your bag, I think one important question that I wanted to make sure that we got to is like what like avenue does photography provide for you? Like as a whole, like does it, is it just a hobby for you that like takes up some of your time? Is it cathartic? Is it when you're going out to shoot, what is your end goal? Is it to make something beautiful? Is it to make money? Like any avenue that photography has for you, I'd love to hear about it.
I'd say it's probably my main creative outlet in my life. I am really bad with my hand, my fine motor control is really bad, so a lot of creative things with like drawing or even like physically writing. I have awful handwriting. In English, though, my Arabic handwriting is fantastic, actually. I'm proud of that. and there's not that much I can do with my hands. I've tried pottery. I'm not good at it. I've tried painting. I'm not good at it. I don't really have like good sense of proportions in terms of like actually creating things.
Mm-hmm.
And so with photography, it's kind of framing what already exists a lot of the time. And I mean, sometimes you're doing direction. If you've got a model, you're placing things, you're making a lot of decisions, but you don't have to like create the thing. I think I'm not very good at, I don't have the sense of creativity of like coming up with things out of nowhere.
Yeah.
But I love to capture things and try to like, I think I'm good at identifying things that are out there.
Good at documenting.
Yeah, documenting. Oh, there we go. Back. And I feel like I can document things well. And even like with maybe a different eye or a fresh perspective. and give myself a creative outlet. Because, I mean, and then with like writing, say not physical writing, but like typing writing. Again, I've done a lot of writing for assignments, for school, mm-hmm. for work. And so again, that also feels like it's hard to make a switch from really being creative versus what a lot I've done usually, which is making an argument, talking about research.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's kind of a medium where it's one of the few mediums where I'm really, where it's nice. Like it's almost nice that I feel like I don't do it for money.
Yeah.
Or because it allows it to be really like a truly creative,
truly part. Hobby, truly like it feeds you. Yeah. You know, you can lose some of that when it's like a paid, yeah. you know, situation. If you're not, if you're not careful about like how it is presented in your life. Yeah.
But also I've never had the opportunity for it to be paid.
So, would you, would you like for it to be paid?
If someone interesting. I might, I've never really, you know, besides posting on Instagram, I've never really displayed or made a push for my stuff to be observed and potentially bought or paid for, like to be like, paid to for that. So I don't really know if that would be a motivating factor. If someone was like, oh yeah, I'd pay you to, you know, do this for like an outdoor brand or something,
mm-hmm.
that might actually get me going.
Yeah.
Seriously, to like really go and do, really go out there, provide the resources, the time, the the direction tack to direct me towards creativity.
Mm-hmm.
So I can't say for sure, but I'd say the role it plays currently is a good cathartic creative outlet that, you know, forces me to not be a robot.
Yeah, for sure.
And also more and more, like we were talking about, like capturing moments. It feels good to really capture a special moment.
Mm-hmm.
And to like to sometimes... Yeah, I feel like it, almost like a photojournalist, but for like, I try to be like a photojournalist of my own life.
I like that. Yeah.
Of like the highlight moments of my life.
Of Gabe's life.
Yeah.
Yeah. In like that, like framing, would you say that you like have like any like personal projects that you're working on, or you're just kind of like approaching it as it's presented to you?
It definitely kind of just goes with what's going on in my life. Like recent, like the stuff that I have loved the most lately is from a trip to San Francisco where we stopped in Yosemite on the way
up. Mm-hmm.
And I mean, I took so many shots in just like a couple hours as we were going through it, and it was snowy and beautiful, and we were out of there in just a couple hours, but I took more shots there than I have in a long time. And it's those kinds of things where we're visiting a friend, so we mm-hmm. go on this trip to this beautiful place, and that gets me to bring out the camera.
Yeah.
And that gets me to produce and be creative. So I think it's kind of requires, it requires something. The photography isn't itself the thing.
Mm-hmm.
It's more like, we're going to do this fun thing on this trip, and I'm going to bring my camera and capture it.
Yeah, absolutely.
I think most recently the biggest projects, if any like project that I've done is that when I did that photo walk, I'd say it was probably like a project.
Mm-hmm.
But I'm trying to get into a gallery soon. We'll see. I might be doing a little gallery situation.
Oh.
And I think it's going to, if I'm looking at my stuff and I think, what am I proud of? What do I want to put out there? The stuff from that little photo walk I did just around the neighborhood would probably feature on a lot of it because that was really like a project and I really thought about it.
Yeah.
Cause when you have like the mountain, the Yosemite Valley as your canvas.
Yeah.
It's not that hard to find some cool shots.
Yeah.
If you're like, I need to make this patch of exurb look cool,
you have to work a little harder.
Yeah.
So it feels like, yeah, I worked for that shot. I made that shot happen, as opposed to I went to the same spot that a bunch of other people have went to coming out of the tunnel in Yosemite Valley, and it's there. And
It feels yours.
Yeah.
Yeah. Like, instead, you know, with the Yosemite, it gets photographed all the time, very, very similarly sometimes. And whereas, like, your street might not be, you know, the most photogenic thing in the world, and the effort and the emotional, like, perspective of it that, like, went into it makes it feel a lot more yours than something else.
Yeah. So I think, I mean, I want to try to pursue more of those projects, because I do feel like unexpectedly good things come out of them.
Mm-hmm.
And sometimes, even if I just wait until some kind of trip or thing happens to take photos, it almost like doesn't live up to the hype, because like if there's no hype because it's just a project that I put work into as opposed to just some trip that I'm going on, and it would like, it's still going to be that, like, memory is still going to be a great memory. It's still going to be a great trip, even if I don't take photos.
Yeah.
But to kind of create something cool out of an average day is like, it feels a little more special.
Yeah, absolutely.
So what that project is next, I want to do some more film reviews. I kind of want to like dig into, like, understand what a film is supposed to do, try to do that, or maybe challenge it, try to get it to do other things.
Mm-hmm.
Love doing film reviews. Do some of that. I think that's kind of going to be my driving force, is like try to hone my skills by like diving into a specific film stock, diving into going deeper instead of being like surface level bopping from different film stock to
the same thing with different film stocks. Yeah. Interesting. Would you say that you have, within like this kind of like area of things, would you say that you have anybody, whether it's like in person or just someone on Instagram or anything like that, that inspires like your style of photography?
Brian Chorsky is a landscape guy on Instagram. God, I don't know what he's shooting with. I don't know what he puts in there. It's just these incredible, gorgeous mountain shots, desert shots. I think he really captures the vibe of like an amazing backpacking trip or a really fun like climbing outing.
Mm-hmm.
So I love that. I he's definitely an inspiration of like, I want to challenge myself to like that's definitely my inspiration with like landscape stuff. Other folks, other inspirations for photography.
It's okay if not.
I know. I'm thinking about what's been getting me going lately. Yeah, he's definitely one. A kind of classic that like someone who I look to for like shooting climbing stuff, because it's hard. It's harder than I expected to get good pictures while rock climbing.
Okay.
Because a lot of the time you're right under or right above, and you're usually with a partner.
Yeah.
And there's not really a good way to get take shots from that situation. But also going out with a partner, so in order to get good pictures, you need to have someone else who's there who's specifically getting themselves in a position to take pictures of the climbing.
Yeah.
And that requires actually a lot of technical knowledge and a lot of work to get into those positions.
I can only imagine.
And so what is this guy's name? Jim Thornburg is an old school rock climbing photographer.
Okay.
And I really appreciate his craft in sometimes when you look at a rock climbing picture, you don't understand how the person got there. And they don't give you that information.
Yeah.
They're not like, oh, yeah, I went, I jugged up a rope on a different wall, or I hiked around, I did like a 3-hour hike around the back of this thing to rappel down to this one position. And that's kind of the stuff that's going on in behind the scenes, but they don't really talk about it. And I love that stuff.
Yeah.
So that, like, the incredible shots that Jim Thornburg has. I mean, he most of his stuff, like, he shot like 20, 30 years ago,
mm-hmm.
but he's still doing great stuff. But the stuff that he shares is just fantastic, and inspires me with, like, I've wanted, like, there are different times whenever any hobby that I'm in, I'm like, oh, I want to be a photographer in this space. Like,
The hobby.
I was a little bit of a skate rat for a while.
Oh.
And I did a little bit of skate photography. I really enjoyed that. I've been enjoying taking some pictures while climbing. And I haven't really dived into, like, actually trying to do the, like, technical and build the skills to, like, really develop that to be, like, a good photographer in mm-hmm. that specific world and what it takes to, like, get those shots. But I'm really inspired by the people who are, like, who capture, because those two industries, the pictures are very important, because you need to document that you did the thing.
Yeah.
In skating, you need evidence that you.
Yeah. Pixar didn't happen.
Yeah. Yeah. Exactly. Pixar didn't happen. Climbing, especially, or both of them, seriously, are so, like, the photographer's role is really important.
Yeah. Imagine if Free Solo happened and nobody captured it.
Yeah. Well, that's the. Yeah. That's one of.
Is there controversy with that?
Yeah, well, kind of. Yeah.
Oh, really?
People are kind of. I mean, in the movie, they talk about it. Probably they talk about it itself, that it's kind of messed up to turn this, like, very pure act into, like, something that's being, like, televised and promoted.
Huh.
And Alex Honnold himself, I think, has a lot of reservations about having his big a sense like that recorded.
Huh. Interesting.
And if I don't know if you've seen The Alpinist.
No, I haven't.
But that was also another movie about a person who specialized in free soloing, and the guy ended up dying before the movie was completed. So the movie, it features him, like, his death wasn't recorded, but basically the people who are doing this documentary about him had to chase him around the world to actually get any footage of him, because he basically refused to be recorded as he was doing his first big solo ascents.
Yeah.
And one of his biggest ones, which was on, like, a mountain in Argentina. This is Marc-André Leclerc, by the way, of The Alpinist. He actually did it, and then he comes back to town and is like, oh, I did it. And everyone's like, what the hell? You just did this. It was a massive, like, ice rock climb up this massive thing. And it was insane. And he did it with absolutely no evidence. And so then the documentarians were like, wait, we need this for the movie. And so he reclimbed it. And they basically took video of him on the second time of him doing it as video to kind of give. I mean, even though they don't really say in the movie, like, this isn't actually him doing it for the first time.
Yeah.
But they like, he had to, they had to kind of, like, catch up, because he didn't really want the actual time.
Yeah.
Like, once he was repeating it, it wasn't too big of a deal for him.
Yeah.
But if the first time he did something, he did it for the cameras.
Yeah.
He wouldn't, he didn't want that to
kind of changes the motivation.
Yeah. So, but I think, yeah. So the, like, but photographing people, but I don't think that's the kind of at the very cutting edge.
Yeah.
But between everything below that, it's you and your friends, or even if you're a professional, you do want your accomplishments recorded.
Yeah, absolutely.
So I think everything up into these really cutting edge dangerous, like existential climbs are, there's so much awesome stuff to be captured there.
It's fantastic.
Yeah.
Yeah. Thank you. Thank you so much for talking with me today. Yeah, really enjoyed it. What's your Instagram?
My Instagram is Gabe_GB.
GB? Like G-I?
GB. Letters.
Oh, just GB. I gotcha. What can we expect from you there?
You can expect...
Do you post your stuff there?
I do post... Yeah, I post my stuff there. I used to have a film account, but then my main account, I just started posting film. So
okay.
I just have one account.
Yeah.
You can expect all the things we talk about. A little bit of stuff from the city. A little bit of stuff from nature. Family, friends, all things that matter to me.
Phenomenal. But yeah, once again, thank you so much. Yeah, it felt like this was half rock climbing pod, half photo. And I'm sure there's a couple people listening that were here for it, and the other half, they were like, can we just move on, please? Anyway, thank you so much. Thank you so much for listening. This has been What's in the Bag with the Venice Photo Club. I'm Matt. Gabe, thank you for being here.
Sick.
And we'll see you next time. Yeah, absolutely.
BPC.